Blog Talk Radio.
Stanley, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, from the Trust in God Radio Network. As we open every show, we open with John Coltrane's Dear Lord, opening with a prayer. And so without further ado, let me start as soon as in prayer. John Coltrane, the iconic, legendary Dear Lord, leads us every show here on Sports in Depth in prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you for little things which are largely take for granted. May your will be our will. We thank you for another day, and more importantly, dear Lord, we just thank you for the goodness and your mercy and your grace. Grace is getting what you don't deserve, and mercy is not getting what you do deserve. God all by yourself. All honor and praise your holy name. Your Lord bless our family here at the panel. And our beloved Rosie and our family, my friends in Brazil. But more importantly, all honor and praise you, the one and only true God, Yahweh. May God bless you, Jesus. In the holy name of Jesus. Amen. And with that, we come on back. And Sports this week. Devil Bow, Howard Weston Jr., Lady A, Eddie Cotton, Rooney, and we say hello to our number one listener in the world from Rosonia, Rosonia. Is that right, Rosie? Our beloved Rosie in Brazil. And, you know, she got back with us. You know, we had history. You know, we started out here in Sports in Depth on Blood Lake Radio Network, and we switched over to the Trust in God Network. And Rosie, a devout fan, you know, it was happy birthday. Her daughter's got a birthday coming next week. She's been our number one fan, and that's just really touching. Somebody not in the United States, somebody that doesn't speak the language as fluent as we do, she uses Sports in Depth as a follow-up on what's happening in sports and to learn some English. And we're all here, always shout out. And just say hello to her and pay homage to her. And we just appreciate her, as we appreciate all our listeners here. And one of the things we're so happy about, too, is that finally, after a long absence, too long for us, but he's finally come on back. And without further ado, bringing you into the Sports in Depth Nation, Melco. So, Rooney, little Coco. Tell the fans, it's time for showtime, please.
Good doctor, the Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr., I'm here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God, the Radio Network. And this girl that serves the drink is here. And that is the incomparable Doc Sam. Take it away, good doctor.
Thank you, Rooney. You know, we miss you, Doc. You've never been gone. And without further ado, oh, yeah. My panel's here, the crew. They're brilliant. They're lovely. They're family. And they're all so beautiful. Jumpside Jonesy, the hoopster. Cincinnati C-Wing, Lady A, Double Barrel House. Rooney, Malcolm, South Smith, Jr. Christina Baby Lewis. Hoping that Muslim will join us too. And how do I feel about them? Well, I think they are simply, as I could say, simply magnificent.
Hey, what's going on?
My crew, baby. The Magnificent Seven. Bring the panel in. Everybody just hold tight. Don't get excited. I know you're here. Speak when you're spoken to, so just calm down. Relax. And Eddie Cotton should be joining us here today. And
I'm here.
I see you, Big A.
Eddie, what's up, Eddie? That's my man.
How you doing, Lady A?
What's up?
It ain't Coach Jeff Slap Jonesy, Double Barrel House. And you know, the thing we wanted to hear, Eddie, and we want to salute. This is Women's Month, and in my key words, I mentioned some key ladies: Rosa Parks, Flo Anthony, number one gossip columnist and one of the renowned writers of her generation in entertainment. Kelly Swanson, who was once the Girl Friday for none other than Butch Lewis. And I couldn't put anybody's name in there and not mention our own, the incomparable, the one and only, Lady A. So we salute Ladies Month and, of course, our beloved mothers. And I want to take a moment to play something. I want to thank Big C for getting this music in it for us. Let's stop. Just take a little musical tribute to the lady. You know, Rosa Parks. You'll understand, you know, they tell that story about, you know, Rosa being tired. It wasn't just Rosa being tired. Rosa took a stand. You understand that Rosa was sitting where she's supposed to have been sitting. She took a lot of grief after that. Her and her husband, they had to move. She was a devout member of the NCAA, and she was an agent working for the government for women who were raped and abused sexually in the South. There's a lot more to Rosa Parks than just not giving a seat up. And the Neville brothers took time out. Salute her. Let's take a minute or two here in the Women's Month. And salute a legendary lady. The one and only, late, late, as Rosa Parks. Now, my brothers, please, a little tribute.
December 1st, 1955, our freedom movement came alive. And because of Sister Rose, you know, we don't ride on the back of the bus no more. Sister Rose, she was tired one day after a hard day on her job. When all she wanted was a well-deserved rest, not a scene from an angry mob. A bus driver said, baby, you got to get up, cause a white person wants that seat. But this Rose, she said, no, not no more. I'm gonna stay right here and rest my feet. Yeah, thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the spark that started our freedom movement. Thank you, Sister Rosa Parks. Thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the spark that started our freedom movement.
Neville brothers, a little salute to Rosa Parks, and just a whole lot of history to her this month. The salute women. Althea Gibson, the first African-American, period, to win a Grand Slam title. And the thing that she was so proud of is after she became a champion, when she was announced, it was Althea Gibson, the tennis championship, Dorothy Hyatt. The names are insurmountable. And we can remember our own women champions, our mothers, our beloved mothers, our aunts, our teachers. And we just took a moment here to salute all of them and realized that Rosa Parks was a whole lot more than a lady who refused to give up her seat. And there were repercussions. Rosa had to move her and her husband. The repercussions came around that. But like they said, she was the start of the movement. And we're going to start here, our show today, with our First Lady, Lady A. You know, you called me, you talked. Rooney, baby, it's so good to have you. And Rooney, you sound like a record. It's like I play a tape when you could. It's just, as Billy Crystal would say, Marv. Everybody, can everybody together just say happy to Rosie, our number one listener in Brazil? Everybody say, say hello to Rosie, everybody. Come on, gang.
Hello, Rosie.
Hi, Rosie.
Hey, Rosie.
Hey, Rosie.
Our number one listener in the world, in Brazil. Lady A, let's kick it off. You know, you talked about the fight last night, Canelo and Gula, and one thing you said that there was some skepticism, some controversy about the fight being. So I called Eddie. I said, Eddie, boom, Eddie, boom, 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 boom. And I mentioned Weeks' name. Eddie said, hey, you know what? Hey, he's confident. He's one of the best. If he stopped the fight, it should have been stopped. Lady A, after Eddie said that, there are no questions for me, Lady A.
I think, you know, safety, I think, is paramount when it comes to boxing. I don't think that my question was a safety issue. Mm-hmm. I think that my question was more a timing issue. I think that after the fight was over, when Jim Gray questioned Virgil Hunter, I think they had already discussed the fact that Angulo was taking enough punches already. But my question was more the fact of the timing. You know, in the 10th round and in the middle of the 10th round, he just took one shot, and it looked like Angulo was still, to some degree, he was still fighting back. You know, I mean, where at that point would it have made a difference if he would have just had let him, you know, at least show that he was fighting back? He was still, to me, he was still cognizant, and it seemed like, it didn't seem like he got knocked down at all. He didn't get knocked down at all. You know, obviously, Tony's a competent guy. I mean, you could take it back to the fight that he had with Jose Luis Castillo and Diego Corrales. I mean, I don't think that anybody would argue with his competence. Even at that fight where he took a point away from Diego Corrales, he spit out his mouthpiece back then, and he still took the point away, you know, gave him time to recover, and then Diego Corrales ends up winning the fight. I believe it was in the 10th round. You guys could correct me if I'm wrong, but he ends up winning the fight in the 10th round and coming back. So, you know, it's not that I think that I'm questioning Tony Weeks' capability. I think my question was more about the timing. You know? So.
Eddie?
Well, Lady A, you know I respect your judgment. I didn't see the fight, and I'll have to make sure that I see it. But when Doc spoke to me, Tony Weeks, he's in the top five referees in the world, and I know that he must have seen something that made him make his judgment call and stop the fight. Now, most times, most good referees keep a mental scorecard. Now, I don't know what the scorecards of the judges were, but in all probability, he was behind and losing the fight as it was. Which
yes.
probably was the case, right?
No, Eddie, you're 100% right. He was right. Losing the fight. I mean, I'd be lucky if I gave him, maybe pushing it would be two rounds.
Okay.
I mean,
wow.
Maybe
right.
pushing it would have been two rounds.
Right.
Eddie,
okay.
I would have given him maybe two rounds.
All
but
right.
I still think that situation being the way it was at that moment, for him,
okay.
I mean, he takes a shot for Canelo, and all of a sudden he stops, and I'm like, how? What?
Okay.
What happened? You know,
okay.
he was
okay.
still reticent. You know, it seemed, still seemed like he was still cognizant of what was going on around him. But to me, just the way he stopped it wasn't like, in other words, Eddie,
okay.
like if you see a guy get taking a lot of shots, you're going to jump in and be like, okay, you know, before
right.
the guy really gets hurt. But
right.
it didn't seem to me like it was the correct time, you know, to
right.
stop it with just the one punch that he took, because he still was, to some degree, still fighting back.
Right.
But,
well,
you know,
well,
I mean.
If you go back to the Diego Corrales Castillo fight, if you remember that one punch, that uppercut that landed on Castillo that made his head pop back.
Yes.
And
he was hit like a rag doll. Correct.
That's when he came in and stopped it. Because
right.
I guess he's seen at that point, and he had made a decision, look, this guy is going to get killed.
Right.
Now, they say that the punch that landed was an uppercut. So the effect of it, maybe you didn't feel. But,
mm-hmm.
but I can tell you that Tony with his experience. And,
no,
and
I don't question his experience at all.
That punch probably reflected on him and said, wait a minute, I better get in here. The guy's losing the fight and before he gets hurt. So
right.
that's what. Now, I'll have to see the fight, Lady A, before I can really make a decision on why and how he did it.
Oh, well,
so,
hey,
so
hey, I tell you what,
I'll,
Eddie, you know what? Right now, Doc Stanley Sports Network, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust Network. So the insight, and this is what I talk about, ladies and gentlemen, when you listen to Sports in Depth. You hear things here you hear no place else. Mel and Lady A, Eddie, who wrote the next week. I mean, you're saying something, a little thing, that's so paramount. I mean, and you said the referee is keeping a mental notebook because all hell breaks loose if it goes another round and the guy goes in a concussion and then all hell breaks loose. So, I mean, you know, a stitch in time saves nine. If he lets the guy go, they say, oh, what the hell was he doing? He's behind every cup. Malcolm Sell Smith Jr., come on, Winnie, you see the fight? Your thoughts here.
Can I just add one more thing, Doc? Can I just add one more thing, Doc? Doc, can I just add one more thing? I just want to ask Eddie.
Hold on, Mel. Is it all right if I let your lady add one more thing to this? I mean, it's not my show anymore.
As far as I'm concerned, Lady A can have the floor. I knew it.
Why did I ask? Go ahead, Lady A, please. Go ahead. Why did I ask?
My question to Eddie would have been, would there have been some impact on Tony's judgment based on the prior fight that he kind of maybe saw what had happened to Angulo with a fractured orbital bone and said to himself, well, you know what? I know what this guy's prior injuries were. So how much of an impact could that have had?
The mental notebook.
That's right, Doc. And Lady A, I think that probably has something to do with it, with the timing, because as a referee and a top-notch referee, I can add, you really have that going on, and you want to make sure that nothing crazy happens under your watch. Because,
right.
You know, with his experience, he seen it. The guy was behind. Like you said, he only won two rounds. I mean, what was the use of letting the fight go on?
Correct.
What was the use of letting it go on? So,
Come on, Rooney.
That one punch that he landed, that uppercut, probably his head snapped back, that ended it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the orbital bone injury that Angulo had was pretty brutal, Doc, if you could, take a look at that eye.
Right.
That was a little, but as I think it was Eddie said earlier, for the most part, I've only seen Tony maybe referee one or two bad calls. But for the most part, I think, as he said, he's considered one of the top, I'd say, five referees in the country, along with Herb Dean and Big John McCarthy of UFC. So,
Along with Eddie Cotton.
It's understood. It's understood that we've got the best referee in the world here, so there's no need to even mention it. You can do it if you want to. But it's understood that Eddie Cotton, Eddie, at one time, I'm going to be honest with you, at one time, Eddie, we thought you were the best, but in time we found out that you are the absolute best, my brother.
Thanks.
And that's my praise coming from Doc Eddie. But I just want to say that Angulo has been in many a war. So if that was in the back of Weeks' mind, this guy's been a lot of wars. I'd rather err on the side of caution. I don't have a problem.
That's right. Correct.
Harold Winston Jr., come on, Harold. Talk to me, baby. You've been in the ring. You've been around referees. The only African matchmaker in the history of MSG. Double Barrel Harold. Your thoughts, your talk. Right, Carl?
Well, my problem is that referees and especially working in fights should be looking at every fighter or as many fights as they can see and see what kind of fighters these fighters are, what kind of punishments they can take. Because you got to understand, these guys are living a livelihood, and at the same time, if a guy's used to taking punishment, and he does, and he can always come back and knock guys out. I mean, if we stop and fight because of one punch in a situation, then I know a lot of championship fights where a lot of guys would not go down in history. They got knocked out in those fights. My point is that it's a catch up call. I mean, my thing is, yes, we want to look at the safety for the fighters, but at the same time, You got to understand that, hey, if the fighter is used to those kind of punches, which this guy's are known to take a lot of punishment and beat guys and come back and knock them out, you know, it's a call that you can't always say that he should have stopped or he shouldn't stop. My point is that you should give him at least another chance before you made that stop. I just think the fight was just stopped a little too quickly at that point. That's all.
And Harold, remember Harold, the late, and I say great because he was just a hell of a fighter, Matthew Saad Muhammad used to make a living out of getting destroyed early in the fight and some of these incredible comebacks.
Thank you.
I remember when he fought. And now, real question, Matthew Saad is still, is he Harold? Matthew's still alive, isn't he?
He's still alive.
He fought Yaki, Mike Rosman took a tune-up against Yaki Lopez and lost.
Yep.
And Yaki Lopez fought Matthew Saad, and Matthew Saad won the fight in about the 14th round, and Yaki Lopez came to the first of the day, and asked Yaki Lopez what happened. He said, I got tired of hitting him. I got tired of it. But then again, too, I'm pretty sure if we go back, it's again, and he said.
But, Doc, I mean, you don't even have to go back that far. I think you can even go back to the Corey Spinks Jab Judah fight.
I'm just saying what Eddie is saying is the referee knows the guy. And that was never displayed more, Eddie, in that fight down in Atlantic City when you – you know, the Barker fight, and it was never displayed even more blatantly. And I think sometimes people have gotten away from realizing that you guys are experts. You guys are a combination of psychologists, doctors, experts, and they just tend to think that you just get in there and push people apart. And what we've learned since you're joining the panel is not like that. I mean, there's
right.
a mindset. I mean, you know the guy's past. It's not just getting in there, Joe Lewis was a referee, so they think you just push the guys apart. But there's a science to this, Eddie. And I think
right.
when we talk about Matthew Saad Muhammad, we knew that this was a guy,
right.
as Howard said, that, you know, you don't stop this right away. And
right.
But as
right.
we've learned,
right.
but as we've learned from you, it's more. Here's Harold Wilson. Okay, Harold's a tough guy. Now I know Harold's good for 15 rounds. How can take a punch? Here's another guy. Now he's got a weak chin. He goes early. It's all about
right.
you know. There's a science and there's a study to this. And what you just said about and then taking in the camp, because so many people forget that that was the thing with the Benny Perez fight. But that he had took a terrible beating the fights before.
He was a guy
who shouldn't have been in the ring. And there's a very good chance that, maybe that should have been stopped. But it wasn't Emil's fault. It wasn't Perez's fault. It was the manager's fault. But it seemed at that time, I think you guys today are more proficient and have more zeal and, let's say, intellect in your job than in the old days. And just the fact that what you said about Weeks, and we go back to your fight down in Atlantic City, there's more to referee, Eddie, than just telling guys to break and push them apart.
That's right, Doc. And let me just remind y'all of one fight that is one fight that we as referees have viewed and made comments on. Mickey Ward, Arturo Gatti, fight number 2.
Oh, yeah, I forgot it. Mm-hmm.
Frank Cappuccino was
It's not over.
And we've looked at that fight, Lady A, gone through training sessions on it, and 9 out of 10 referees that have looked at that fight would have stopped the fight when Gatti turned his back on him and stumbled towards the ropes. But Cappuccino let it go on. Luckily for him, and luckily for boxing, Gatti recovered, came back, and won that decision. But when we looked at that, 9 out of 10 of us said, including me, that
Eddie,
we would stop that fight.
Eddie, when you look at the Yuri Foreman Miguel Cotto fight, McCarthy took great control of that fight. I mean, he said no. He said, you've been fighting. He said to me, you've been trying to hang in there. What do you want to do? I mean, he took great control of that fight. Eventually, Cotto ended up winning the fight.
Yeah.
And he hurt his knee.
Arthur McKinney Jr., son of Arthur McKinney Sr., Arthur's friend of mine. Arthur used to be one of the ball boys out there at the New York Mets back in the day at Dr. J, and he would come. Is he one of the top referees, Eddie, in your estimation, Arthur McKenna Jr.?
You know what? He's a nice guy, but I don't put him in the top five.
Kenny Bayless, no, definitely one. Tony Weeks.
Kenny Bayless, Tony Weeks. I like Robert Bird. You know, even though he's getting a little older now.
What about Bruce? Bruce isn't bad, I don't think. That bad, right?
Who?
Smolga? He has a tendency sometimes to let guys box. I think sometimes he has a tendency to let guys box out. No?
Let me reserve my comment on him because he's had a lot of opportunities in major fights, and to me, he's been slipping lately.
Really?
Joe
Cortez
was the one of my favorites. But as years went on, his last couple of years, he started slipping. That's why he retired.
Eddie, does McCanty make the top 10?
We say, does McCanty make my top five?
Your top ten.
No.
Now, how good was his dad? Because as we have to take a minute here, give me 2 seconds here, gang. Come right back because we got to make a quick notation as we talk about boxing. Don't anybody move. And let me just say this here. Doc Stanley, Sports in the Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. Talking about fights. This is the 43rd anniversary. The day before yesterday, Ali Frazier won. And, you know, Eddie, the big thing about that fight, there was so much whoop to do it, and Harold was such an integral part of that fight. There was so much concern of who was going to be referee. Arthur McKenney Sr. got that fight. He's been long denoted as one of the top referees in the game. Eddie, your estimation, was Arthur McKenney one of the lead referees of the game?
No doubt. Arthur McKenney Sr. was one of the best referees in the game. He always maintained control. He always kept a good distance, and he was always the same. His style was always the same, whether he had a lightweight or whether he had a heavyweight. And a matter of fact, my second pro bout in Atlantic City, he was there with some other people. And after the bout, he told me a couple things about what to do and what not to do. And I always respected that because he didn't know me. But, you know, he's one of the greatest of all time. Yes.
You know, it's funny you said that, and I want to tell quick, you know, everybody knows about my Trust and Guard Entertainment Artifacts Museum. Two of the things that I from a boxing standpoint of view, 2 weeks ago, the Roseland closed down last professional fight ever there. The man who did the last main event there was Eddie Cotton. And I asked Eddie, could I have the bow tie you have in? Eddie said, here's another one for you. Gave me the bow tie. That he refereed the Lennox Lewis Mike Tyson fight. That's in here.
Oh my God!
That's right.
Classic.
Yeah, he walks over to me. And says, you know, it's like you ask a guy for a dollar, he gives you $100. You know what I mean? and it meant so much to me because of what you mean to me as a professional, as a friend, and you tell Arthur McCanty. I asked Mr. McCanty for the longest time for a bow tie, and. Arthur McKenney Sr.'s fight at the Barclay, the last time he came and handed me a bow tie, it was his bow tie that was his dad's bow tie. So I have two of the greatest referees of all time, Eddie Cotton, Arthur McKenney, and also we'll talk about some other names then. Talk a little basketball here real quick. The Knicks are hot. Jump shot, Jonesy, 3 in a row. The Nets are back at 500. We may still have a chance, Jump shot, Jonesy. We still may have a chance of both teams making the playoffs. I think the Knicks lost a couple of big games in that streak, double-figure leads, and lost the game 3 in a row. They're beating teams they have to beat. Can they still make the playoffs, Jump Shot?
They can still make the playoffs, Doc, but are you really called a playoff team when you're 15 games under 500? Do they still call you a playoff team, or are you just qualifying for the for the next round? I don't know. There's some NCAA teams right now that have a better record than the Knicks. But, you know, I guess any way you can get in by any means necessary, as Malcolm X used to say. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The thing is, with Mike Woodson now, you know, with Phil Jackson's name being thrown out there? I mean, is that the ultimate disrespect, or is just partial disrespect?
Jonesy, tremendous point you bring here. And I talked to Hoops about that earlier. And I said this, Doc Stanley, Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network, you know, Phil Jackson, as Marion B. Boykin would say, Badlands Boykin, Black Bodacious Beard, from my estimation, Phil Jackson has perpetrated the fraud as a coach. Every team that Phil Jackson coached, anybody else could have coached. Anybody could have coached those teams.
No, I won't go as far as to say that, Doc.
Hold on, jump shot. I got the ball. Give me the screen for a minute. Okay. This is my point. Jackson has coached teams that anybody could have coached. And if he was that great of a coach, okay, how come he didn't win the 2 years Mike was out? If he was that great of a coach, the 2 years Mike was out, how come he didn't win? And then when he got swept after Kobe made that jump shot, okay, that made the series 1-1 against Detroit, they swept him. And nobody acted like he was on the sidelines, like he wasn't coaching anymore. It's not hard to say, okay, Mike, Scotty, Dennis, Cartwright, it ain't hard to do that. But I'm just saying, you know, if it was that good of a coach, what happened the 2 years that Mike wasn't there?
I would like to opine on that. You know, okay. Here's the thing. You know, I think that at this juncture, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference, because I don't think Carmelo's going to come back. So he's going to have to start a team from scratch.
Well, he won't
next
come
season.
Back, Lady A, if he wants to win. It'll cost him roughly $34 million.
Phil Jackson. He's not coming back. I don't think Carmelo's coming back.
Really?
Not if he wants a ring. I have to agree with Lady A.
And Doc, just to add to that also, I mean, I think that not only are you losing, you're going to lose Carmelo, but you're going to have to restructure that team completely once that happens. And even if he were to stay, Doc, you're talking about another season with him and with the same of types of players.
Here's the question, Jump Shot. They won 54 games last year with this team. What happened this year, Jump Shot? What happened?
No. There's been roster changes, Doc.
Go ahead, tell me. Remember, last year,
also with that 54-win team, you started out with future Hall of Famer Jason Kidd.
Mm-hmm.
You started out
mm-hmm.
with Rasheed Wallace. You started out
Great
with
point.
Kurt
Great
Thomas,
point.
Although Kurt may be 155 years old, but he was on the roster. You know, so you started out with veterans, and then you had Kenyon Martin come on the team a little later on as well.
Mm-hmm. Their roster talent-wise decreased,
and three teams in the Eastern Conference, their roster increased. Look at Indiana.
Look at how the Bulls crushed the Heat. That's awesome. The Bulls crushed the Heat. That was great.
If you want to count their guard tandem plus their center and about two or three other guys on the team who are playing well below, their regular game. I mean, Chandler just started, showing back up, especially in the rebounding department. The two guards have been invisible and get spanked by every point guard in the league.
All right, just start talking about my Brooklyn team now. Talk about
what
the Brooklyn Nets right now.
Well, hold on. The point, because people keep saying that, and that's why I asked the question, because, you made so tremendous amount of points there, Jump Shot, and the fact that it's not the same thing. It's the same thing that Cincinnati Seawings, was in NFL 401 talking about the Jets, the deterioration of the play of Mark Sanchez had a lot to do with the deterioration of the structure of the people that he had around him. And the point you make is so great, Jump Shot, this is not the same team that won 54 games. It's not the same personnel. And now let's give me your defense of Phil Jackson. You said you want to defend him. I just don't think he's ever coached a team that he had to coach. And when he came in, me and Hoops were talking about, he took the Bulls, which showed what a horrible coach that Doug Collins was. I've always said this about Doug Collins. Here's a guy who didn't want to pass the ball to Dr. J. So how serious could he be about winning? But, I mean, he came to took that Collins team and then they elevated. I think Phil has been
you know, outstanding coach to a degree, but I just don't see where Phil Jackson means instantaneous winning. He had chances to grab teams that he could have coached, could have nurtured. He didn't take those opportunities. I think Larry Brown is without question, a superior coach, without question. And Larry Brown, like Phil, got a ready-made team when he did finally win an NBA championship, and he's to date the only coach to win an NCAA championship and an NBA championship. But I think this whole thing about – I mean, Phil Jackson was a scrub on those teams, a scrub.
Well,
I mean, you know –
his thing,
Doc,
I'm not here to defend Phil Jackson. Actually, his record speaks for itself. You can say the same thing about Red Auerbach if you want, if you really want to do an evaluation.
Coaches
sometimes
get too
much
credit. Yeah. No,
Auerbach
was a better coach.
And also, they get too much of the blame when they lose.
No,
Auerbach
is a better coach, though. Jump shot, Auerbach was a better
coach. They do have a good coach. I think Mike Woodson is a solid coach.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying
Woodson is solid, Doc, and jump shot. Woodson, in my opinion, is a solid coach, but they're not playing for him. I'm sure
they're
playing
there's two things here. They're not playing for him. Well, they're not playing for him, and there's nobody there to play. But now, in defense of Auerbach, I mean, there's a couple of things Auerbach did. You know, Auerbach, it was the Celtics that drafted a black player. It was Auerbach, as Chamberlain said, was the first guy, the first coach to put five black players on the floor. And, you know, Auerbach saw what Russell could do, devised that system around Russell, and made some great draft picks. I mean, Bird didn't want to play. He still drafted him anyway, for my money. Auerbach is a far superior coach than Phil Jackson. Far superior coach.
Well, the thing
coach.
About Jackson, Doc, the thing about Jackson, if I just may quickly say, is I'm not going to get on Phil for this reason, okay? He was smart, Doc. I mean, anytime you can coach two different teams. And both, let me finish. And anytime you can coach two different teams, okay, two different squads, and both time have basically the top two players in the league, I
would
fault you for it.
Oh, no, I have. It's like Jim Brown said. Jim Brown said in the Cleveland system, you know, I didn't have to block. I'm saying when you talk about a coach, Phil Jackson's not a coach. He never coached anybody. I mean, it's a push button situation. You're telling me that because Bobby Richardson was on five world championship teams as a Yankee, he's a better second baseman than Joe Morgan.
No, that's not
two.
What I'm saying, Doc. What I'm saying is...
Rudy,
hey,
I'm talking about Jeff
Scott.
Not you.
Okay. But what I'm saying, Doc, is if you could have basically a ready-made team, just go and be a contender, more power to you.
Oh, no, I have no problem, but that's the point I'm making. That's the point. Rudy said it. Jackson had ready-made teams. Ready-made. It was easy. I mean, it's like Casey Stengel is the quintessential example of a guy with a ready-made team and a not-ready-made team. He was a great manager with the Yankees. He was a horrible manager with the Mets. Why? He didn't have the players. But the Yankees,
That's for every coach. That's for your great coaches. That's for your mediocre coaches. That's for your bad coaches. That's a given, Doc. That's across the board.
I understand where you're coming from. I need you to understand where I'm coming from. You know, to say this guy is a great coach and he already has a great team, you're not a great coach. I mean, Auerbach won 11 championships in 13 years with Russell. But he brought Russell in, okay. Hey, now understand, when Russell came out of college, he won back-to-back NCAA championships. He had 20 points, 20 rebounds a game. He was able to score. He said, Russ, look at Russ. How about this? Okay? And then he turned around and said, okay, you guys don't want black players? I got no problem. Where's Casey Jones? Casey, I need you to play the defense. Hey, Sam, thank you. Shoot that jump shot. Hey, Willie, you know, the Knicks don't want you. Not Willie. Sats, Knicks don't want you coming up here. Okay? Okay, hey, Kuzi. Okay, I understand. But you know what? I need Sean. I need to come up to the bench. Hondo, check this out. I know you're All-American out of Ohio State. I know you're a starter, but you know what? I need you to come off the bench. Because you know what, Hondo? It's not who starts the game, who finishes the game. This is what Auerbach did. Willie Nauls, M. Bryant, two guys that were discarded and made them champions. Okay? 11 championships in 13 years. No, because Russ won 11. So he won 10 championships in 12 years. 10 championships in 12 years, and with the same team. But he was a coach. I mean, don't tell me that Phil Jackson was the coach. Phil Jackson coached, yes, but Phil Jackson was not a coach. Okay? He coached.
How many years, Doc, was Michael Jordan on the Bulls before they won a championship? And who was the coach, who his coaches before Jackson with Michael Jordan that did
win that championship? Who did he have? Okay, they got rid of Oakley. They brought in, I mean, Scottie finally stood up. Don't ever forget this. If the Detroit Pistons and Isaiah Thomas had not aged, Michael wouldn't have won a championship as soon as he did. I don't know what happened to those teams. I don't know what happened to those teams. But it's an amazing thing. I want to say this to you. Everybody talks about, not saying sports in the Blog Talk Radio on the Pistons Guardian Network. Everybody talks about Isaiah Thomas. And he was the leader of the Pistons, and that's why they didn't put him on the Dream Team, you know, and he made those guys tough. Well, hold on. Who was the coach of the Detroit Pistons? Chuck Daly. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And who was the coach of the Dream Team? Chuck Daly. Wait a minute here. Whoa. So we're going to get on Isaiah for following orders from Chuck? If the Pistons don't deteriorate, Michael doesn't have a three-peat. He won the championship. Because they always said he would never win one. But let's look at the circumstances, okay? If Isaiah, and understand this. As an all-around player, Isaiah Thomas is superior to Michael Jordan. A guy that could do everything. Could dribble, could rebound, could pass and shoot, okay? But if that Detroit Piston team doesn't deteriorate, Michael doesn't do no three-peat. And the question I ask you once again, here's the question. If Jackson was that great of a coach, why did he not win the 2 years Mike was gone? I rest my case. Okay, if he's that great of a coach, I'm asking you.
Your case is still in the courtroom, Doc. This team has done something in the history of the game. They've done it twice. Until it's done by another team,
Jonesy, I'm glad you said it. You know why? Okay, I'm going to tell you something, Jonesy. Right. Jonesy, listen to you now. Do you know how many times the Celtics won the NBA championship in a row?
Yes.
Take a guess. Huh?
They are the only other team. That's what
The Celtics won the championship.
Who played
eight
during the 60s.
8 years in a row.
That's right. How many teams outside of Celtics, have won 3 consecutive championships twice over the last 25 years?
Giving.
There's only one thing, Doc.
If Miami does it this year,
then you can put them in the conversation.
Well, no, I understand. I understand that those were great teams. But it's not hard to coach a great team. And like I said, Phil Jackson, he may have coached, but he did no coaching.
Team on a platter, you're saying, Doc. He didn't build a team. He was handed a team.
Every time. Every single time. And every time the wings are going to be, and every time he wasn't handed a team on a platter, he didn't coach. I don't know. I'll think about this. I'll get back to you. Every time he had a chance to coach a team, Phil Jackson said, you know what? I'll think I'll pass. Gentlemen, I understand where you're coming from. Come with me here, else we got to stop. I understand that. But don't tell me he was a coach. I understand that. Okay? That's what I'm telling you. Don't tell me he was a coach when you handed him a pat hand. I mean, he gave me 5 minutes, and I won. Oh, wow. Oh, come on. Why didn't he coach? Every time he got a chance to coach a team that he had to coach, Phil Jackson did. And here's the bottom line of Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson was a scrub on the Knicks. A scrub. He was a scrub. Understand?
Yes, he was.
Tell me, don't act like this guy was this outstanding player and devised. He didn't lock up nobody. Everybody scored on him. Rebels, is, he never made the defensive team.
Hey,
Doc,
how was Greg Popovich as a player? Does anybody know what Greg Popovich was? But now Popovich is another guy, a great hand.
Is it hard to tell Parker and Duncan and Janoa? It ain't hard. And let me tell you something. As a GM, if these guys hadn't put the right players out there, they wouldn't have been there. I mean, don't think it's, well, George come with the bench.
Isn't that part of coaching, putting the right guys out there?
No. There's a difference.
Because if you put the wrong guys out there, you're probably not going to win.
Let me tell you something. If they had put the wrong
guys out there, they wouldn't have been there.
Right players. But let me tell you, if they don't put the right guys out there, they wouldn't have been there. They wouldn't have been there.
Can I just say something? But you're saying the right guys. But if you have an all-star team, then what guys are wrong guys and what guys are good guys? Everybody you've been playing is good.
Nothing like boxing. Jackson, the one of the elite coaches, and you brought up a good thing about Parker, is another guy nobody talks about. Casey Jones is another outstanding coach. You know, also, I mean, real quickly, though, hold on, gentlemen. Yeah, wait, hey, Wings, what happened to Kamani here? He's gone. What happened?
Well, he's the first, I believe, of three to go. And this crazy free agency that's going to start on Tuesday. He accounted for roughly almost $6 million on a cap hit. He was plagued by hip problems, but he did amass 316 tackles, 28 interceptions, and 4 defensive touchdowns.
Hey, wait. Quit showing up. Just answer the question. Cut the numbers, okay? Quit showing up.
He was cut by the Jets to clear up
there are some grumblings. And Lady A, maybe you can cut the mic off for a minute. There's some grumblings. There's some talk that Mark Sanchez could come back. They say he's got a better shot at making the team by staying if he will reconstruct his contract. One, does he have a shot? Two, do you think he would reconstruct his contract?
I think that Mark Sanchez needs to start over. I think he would do better in the West Coast offense, somewhere like out in the Raiders. He accounts
really?
For $13 million cap hit. He's supposed to make this upcoming season $9 million in base, $2 million roster hit bonus, and $2.5 million in miscellaneous bonuses. And then also you have Santonio Holmes, who has been plagued by injuries, hamstrings, who only put up 23 receptions for 456 yards and 1 touchdown last season. He accounts for a $10 million cap hit. $8.25 million base salary, $1.25 million roster bonus, another $1.25 million in miscellaneous bonuses. So if you clear up the rest of these two guys, Sanchez and Holmes, you could add nearly another $30 million to the roughly $23 million in cap space that the Jets have, giving them a little over $50 million to go out and maybe pick up a guy to work behind Geno Smith, such as Michael Vick, at this stage of his career that could still play but also has the experience that can mentor a quarterback such as Geno Smith.
Well, here's the question. You mentioned Vick. Yeah, I'm thinking two things real quick. And they're talking about Revis with the possibility of now being a high cornerback. You made that say they're talking about the Niners. They're talking about New England. And here's the thing, too, and hold on, Jonesy. I know you're going to come. Hold on. I'm going to shoot it. I mean, you're talking about Michael Vick. Here's the question. Is New York ready for two black quarterbacks? Yeah. Wings, you hit that first, and then, Roni, I want you to come behind it. To Jonesy. I mean, is New York ready for two black quarterbacks?
You want to know something, Doc, that I meant to ask you? I heard that now Geno Smith, the offense, they're trying to make it so that he doesn't throw as much. That was recently reported on SNY.
A tight end, among others. That's what he needs. He has to have a tight end for a safety valve reason.
Right. I think what they're trying to do now, from what I was hearing, was that they're trying to increase the running game more so that not to have him throw as much. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody else heard the same thing, but that's the rumor that I heard today.
Well, Wayne, come on.
It's a matter of, the Jets, they'll be looking at Golden Tate, being that he hasn't got any offers yet from Seattle.
Here's the question with Tate, Wayne, is he healthy? Is that the reason why he hasn't got it? I mean, because I think that was the big question. He had some injury problems last year, if I'm correct, and then there's concerns about his health. Is he healthy, and is the look-see by the Jets sincere or just window dressing?
I think he's healthy enough to play on the Jets. Obviously, he was plagued by injury over the last couple of seasons, but I think he would be healthy enough. And also, Hakeem Nicks, there were grumblings that he may look to play with the New York Jets, but I don't think the Jets would pick him up. I mean, he had no touchdowns. He has foot and knee problems. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he always wanted that big contract.
But he always wanted that huge contract, finally. But on his performance, this year, doesn't look like he's going to get anywhere near what he's searching for.
Not only that, I mean, he's a guy who he just can't stay on the field. I mean, he just can't. Every time you look, he's injured. So to ask that kind of money, and not to be able to even get on the field. I mean, last year he had injuries, the year before he had injuries, even have a good game, have two good games, and he can't play because of injuries. But I think the thing that the Jets would look at would, if you would get Hakeem, you'd also get a player that would help put people in the seats. I mean, you'd have that giant mystique. Am I right, Wings? I mean, it's one of those things. But
I think Michael Vick would be a good fit there because just the fact that of his experience. I mean, he's also played by problems. Remember, he was hurt when they played the Giants when we covered that game.
You're right, Lady. Yeah, that's been his thing, too.
His
quarterbacking style, he's going to probably be hurt again.
But he would be
an E3 thing going on where the guy's always running out front.
When he was a kid, he dreamt about being a running back.
Vic
was one of the first quarterbacks to take a lot of when he played for the Falcons. Probably one of the first quarterbacks, really mobile quarterbacks in the NFL at that time. And he took a tremendous amount of hits and punishment.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, the guy was getting flipped over in the air. It was crazy.
He played like a kid playing football in the street. Jump shot. Okay, what's the story here? What you feel on the Jet move? You like Vic coming? You don't Vic coming? Talk to me, Jump Shot.
Ideally, I would love to see Michael Vick come to the Jets. However, he still believes. I don't know if the other 32 teams believe this, but he still believes he's a number one quarterback in this league, and he is looking for a place where he can go and be the starter. I don't think New York is that place right now. I think New York has to continue to try to develop Geno Smith, a 23-year-old, to build on the future, unless you're going to find someone in the draft.
They're going to go wide receivers. Mike is not going to come here for second string.
Doc, who's the next guy that would have been third stringer? Third.
Matt Sims.
You talking about Sims?
Okay. So he would have been the third stringer. Now he would be the third stringer for this season coming up. What's his contract? Is his contract up next this year again or no?
Well, he has the rookie contract. I mean, he just doesn't fit as a starting quarterback. I mean, remember the Jets cut him the year before last, before the start of the season. I mean, I don't think you'll ever see him unless everything falls apart, is the a starting quarterback anywhere in the National Football League. Just as I said when we were with Blake Radio a couple of years ago, that Tim Tebow, when he was being drafted, I said he's not going to last in the NFL. He's a great athlete, but he just doesn't have the throwing capability in form, maybe just out of habit of, you know, just the way he throws. I don't think he'll ever make it as an NFL quarterback. And Johnny Manziel. I'm saying it right now on Blog Talk, Doc Stanley Sports and Death Show, that Johnny Manziel probably will last maybe three years in the National Football League.
You know, I'm very interested to see what Manziel looks like in the pros. I really am. I mean, he's a little smallish for quarterback to begin with in today's pro game. And I'm very – but he has that –
Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot more to being a quarterback than that. I mean, you know, I think, too, you got to look at him overall. He's had issues, and as a team leader – that has a lot to do with you, with guys believing on you taking them to the promised land as well. Now, I don't think his leadership skills are all there either, you know. And it's the same thing, like, you have to be able to have that respect from the players too. And I don't know if he really has that. I don't know if he really has it, man.
The thing too would be coming into the pros.
Just like to say this, Doc. You know, there were times when we went to the Jets games,
mm-hmm.
and there have been times when you would see guys in the huddle, you know, and they're looking at this guy, and it was like, you know, it's like they didn't have that. You could tell from their body language, they didn't have that belief, you know, that they were going to be able to do those things. And I'm talking about the latter part of Sanchez, you know, Sanchez's time with the Jets. You know, toward the end of his time there, you could see, like, in the huddle, I would look at you, Doc, and I'd be like, look at the players. You could see their body language. Like, this guy's going to really, really take us to where we need to go. You know, I think that a lot of it and the cohesiveness is formed. And you know, and Lucas has talked a lot about it on SNY, which is like, a lot of the cohesiveness and the belief behind where they're going to go and what they're going to do and what the next play is going to be like and the season in general – It's all based on the quarterback. The quarterback is the leader of the team. And if you got a guy there that's a clown, you know, and is not believing in what he needs to do for the season, throwing passes at people's heads, okay, and doing butt fumbles, I don't think guys are going to really believe in a guy like that.
You're back there quiet. Come on in here now. They're talking about the deterioration of Mark Sanchez. They're talking about Geno Smith. You got a thought. Come on, Hal. Kick it to me. Come on. Everybody's talking. Say something, Hal.
I think he said what he had to say about Mark Sanchez by not saying nothing right there.
You're right. But you know what? I think he said all he had to say right there, Doc.
Silence is golden.
To Sanchez's defense.
Exactly.
And I really like the guy. I think he really took the team by the horns. I mean, when he had the talent around him, he definitely made a lot of bad calls, bad throws. But any quarterback can do that. Look at Peyton Manning in the Super Bowls. Look at his
But wait, to cut you off. How much of the bad decision maker? I mean, I think Rudy, I got to shoot a name at you, but don't we have to put some of that fault on Schottenheimer, Rooney?
Oh, Schottenheimer, my favorite coordinator. You would ask me that. I mean, are you kidding, Doc? Look, but seriously, my problem is with this, okay, as far as Sanchez. This is my problem in a nutshell, okay? He's the type of dude that if you surround him with some serious talent, you actually can win some games with him. You can win with him if you surround him like he was surrounded his first couple of years when he went to the AFL, the championship game. His problem is that he's not the type of quarterback that makes people around him better.
Thank you. Even Michael Jordan had that characteristic where he made other people better, like he made Scottie Pippen better. You know, guys that are true leaders find ways to win. and they find ways to do things and do things to get them to the next level. And I just don't see that with a guy like Mark Sanchez. I'm sorry.
I don't know. But I think it was a lot of bad play calling too.
If that's the case, I'm talking Wings. If we've got to put and Rooney, man, I mean, you should have been up here with one to stick one of those pins in your man's shot. Now, I think that, you know, that you're right, Cincinnati C, Mr. 401. A lot of that had to be Schottenheimer. And Rooney, I mean, how did you say the guy had no imagination with the offense? They got over, when he had the elite players. You know what I mean?
When we covered the AFC championships, when the Jets lost against Pittsburgh,
they lost
that game on that goal line when they were in the red zone there, and they ran
exactly.
it up the middle four times.
Three times in a row. I mean, you didn't have Jim Brown back there. You didn't have Earl Campbell. That wasn't Gale Sayers. I mean, and we got to put the fall on Sharma. Well, I got a dovetail on, too. Dr. Sandy Sports at Block Talk Radio on the Trustin' Barber Network. Let's take a quick little break, gang. Let's honor Rosa Parks one more time, talk about some birthdays, talk about some more football and basketball. Yeah, Lady A, you know, I don't know if Jordan made people better as opposed to he carried them. I think Oscar Robertson made people better.
Yeah, but, Doc, I mean, you know, you can't say that he didn't make Pippen better. I think that he made Pippen better. I think you could make that argument, no?
That's a terminology. You know, when they talk about LeBron's Mount Rushmore and the Hoopster, before I go to break, you're Hoopster, you hear. I've been fighting with Jump Shot. I said that Phil Jackson had teams that anybody could coach. I don't think he coached the Bulls, but I don't think he was an outstanding coach. Hoopster, what's your thought on that? I don't think Phil Jackson was all that, Hoopster. But what's your thoughts?
Yeah, he was on and off. He was on and off.
What up, Hoops? What's up, Poppy?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, Hoopster, if you're not going to be down with me, you know what I mean, then, you know, just, you know, be like, I don't say nothing. Just on and off.
Let me ask this question then, on and off. Well, was he more on or more off? Was he more on or more off?
Get him, Mel. Mel. Hey, who's the Mel? See something, baby.
Wah, wah, wah. I hear something now. I think I better wake up now. I think I'll get my ass kicked now.
Doc Sandy, Sports in there, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard. It's Women's Month. We salute our great mothers, our great wives, our own beloved Lady A. We salute Florence Anthony and also Kelly Swanson. Let's take a break and let's listen. Never broke salute the lady who started the freedom movement. Rosa Parks, Never Brothers, Sister Rosa. Doc Sandy, Sports up. Be back in about 2 minutes.
Bus no more. Sister Rose, she was tired one day after a hard day on her job, when all she wanted was a well-deserved rest, not a scene from an angry mob. A bus driver said, baby, you got to get up, cause a white person wants that seat. But Miss Rose, she said, no, not no more. I'm gonna stay right here and rest my feet.
Yeah, thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the spark. Thank you.
began to sing this song to me for being a symbol of our dignity. Thank you, Sister Rose.
Thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the star that started our freedom movement. Thank you, Sister Rosa Parks. Thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the star that started our freedom movement. Thank you, Sister Rosa Parks. Thank you, Miss Rosa. You are the star that started our freedom movement.
Knox Daily, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio. Now, people ask me, they say, Doc, that opening theme was Fred Hammond. Call Me Righteous is the title that we thank Big C, who added some music that we needed here for the group. They're here. Doc Daily, Sports in Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. We salute all the ladies and women, much start with our mothers, our great aunts, our wives. And as I do, you know, I have a special feeling and affinity to my panel, Lady A, Mel Cosell Smith Jr., Double Bow Howard, Western Union, Dutch H. Red Brown, the Jumpside Jones, Cincinnati Chiefs 411, GW Mike, and, you know, to all the land somebody. As these people who come in, Eddie Cotton, I said, you hear things here, you learn things here. And this list of my panel here is one so that you can end up with the sports, and not only from the sports perspective, but from the performers and players of this event. And then it ends up being also that you find out that sports is depth, but their intellect and their mindset turns out to be also sports in the world, as we can touch all subjects. By sending, closing up, Rock Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And now, back to my panel. They're not the best around. They're the best ever around. Lady A, Jumpside, Jonesy, Caruso, Cincinnati, T-Wings, Muscle, the Cisco, Kingston, H. Red Brown, GW Mike, Nick B. Berger, and our special guest, the greatest referee of all time, Eddie Cut. And with that, we get back into it. You know, the basketball thing. Go ahead.
Doc,
go ahead.
You want me to answer that question with Phil?
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, I want you, baby.
Okay. Phil was in the right situation. He had to coach them. He had to play it. So all he had to do was this duty. He had to do like a little plays, and that was about it.
You know, it's exactly, you know, what Jonesy, everybody said, and I understand that. I'm just saying, yeah. You know, don't tell me that the guy that you happen to give the job to was always the most qualified. I think a superior coach was Larry Brown as a coach. The thing with Larry, though, Larry had this tendency that, you know, Larry had all to do with the winning and nothing to do with the losing. But his record shows that where he coached, teams improved and played, you know, played better basketball. And you know,
I mean, like I said, you don't
begrudge Phil for coming into the right situation at Jumpshot Jones. You said, I mean, hey, listen, you know what? You can work 5 hours a day for $200, or you can work eight for $200. I mean, you can take the better deal. But
can I ask a question? Can I ask Hoops a question, though?
Go ahead.
Hoops, I was saying earlier that, you know, I believe that even if he does come to the Knicks, number one, Carmelo won't be there. And number two, I think they're still going to have to change the players that are on
definitely.
The floor right now. What do you think?
See, right. First, like I was saying earlier, last week, they still got to, through 2015, clear that cap.
Right.
So it's going to be a while for him to play that cap. Plus, as he come in at the office, he got a lot of mess to clean up.
Right.
I hope he does get the job. His
modus operandi is not one to come in a situation that's not clean, perfect, and set intact. know, right. that's just my – now, he could come into this – now, the only way this Nick job would work because he'll come in at a position that is not a win or lose situation, okay? So it's not about, you know, winning or losing, not making the playoffs. So he could come in, but, and it'll be understood that he's coming in taking a mess because it's really amazing how they always talked about what Isaiah did. And you brought D'Antoni in here who did nothing else but the exact same thing. You brought Danny Walton, so you had two guys doing what you said Isaiah was doing, and you got the same results. And those guys, there was no accountability to those guys. They're still talking about Isaiah.
Hey, Doc, I have a question.
Well, hey, Doc, can I say something? Ex-coaches did well. Look at Jerry West did well with the Lakers. Did very well.
Yeah, but then again, Jerry had a good. Was it hard to be a GM of them Lakers? I mean Jerry.
Hey, when he signed Shaq, that did it all. That did it when he reached.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't hard. I see. I would like to see.
He's also a special consultant with the Golden State Warriors. So he's doing
This is my problem. You know, I've seen the Jerry West and the Dave DeBusschers get GM jobs. What about Earl Monroe? What about Walt Frazier? What about Oscar Robertson? Where are the jobs for the black great elite players? And in every sport. I mean, nobody ever asked Willie Mays to manage. Nobody ever asked Hank Aaron to manage. Now, you know, this is what I'm saying. You know, and then when you do give African-Americans a job, you give them an expansion team. You know, and expect them to win.
I think the other side of that is...
manage the Indians, Doc?
Yeah, but I think the other side of what you're saying, Doc, too, is that they're more highly scrutinized than everybody else.
No question about it.
I think that's the flip side of it too, where you have the other side of where you're under a microscope more so than anybody else.
Eddie, I have to think too. You know that happened, you know, with you and the other African American referees coming in. I know that there was our bash at Leyland. We had to be twice as good to get half a chance. Did you find the microscope more intense on you as you started out than your non African American counterpart, Eddie?
No question, Doc. And it's still going on till today. No matter how much experience you got, how long you've been in it, and let me tell you something that I found out about 2 months ago. Now, you guys talk about the job that I did with the Gil Barker fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I did a great job. The fans thought that I did a great job. Do you know that Gil's people made a formal inquiry to the IBF appealing the event because they thought that I gave Barker an extra second to recover, and they went through a formal appeal coming from England.
Eddie, you said 1 minute. Eddie, you didn't say 1 second. You said 1 second, Eddie?
No, 1 second.
My goodness.
And my count for when he was down on one knee. And you know, I kind of laughed at it because the president of the IBF called me and said, Eddie, do you believe that these people are appealing your count? I mean,
Eddie, you know what my answer to you is? Eddie, you know what my answer to you is? Yes, I do believe it. Yes. Yes, I do. Were you on the grassy knoll in 69? Yes. Were you on the grass? Yes. Yes. I do believe it. Yes. Come on, man.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to say to that, Eddie, I'm going to say what TK would say, man. Only in America, man.
Where's Harold Weston? Harold, 1 second, Harold? That's what, and the promoter is from the town next to me. That's Gary Shaw.
That's
awesome. And I saw him about maybe a month later, and he didn't say one word to me. And I really wanted to approach him and say, Gary, you spent $3,000 on an appeal on a 1 second count when you know, he said that, you know, I gave him an extra second. He had a stopwatch, a timer, and everything. And the IBF just, you know, they heard it. It took them 15 minutes to make a decision because, you know, they have to have three referees from different places. It took them 15 minutes, and they told the man, get the hell out of here.
But wait, Eddie, here's something better for you. Did you pour the haterade with ice or without ice?
And
understand, it could not have been orange, Eddie. You could not use an orange Gatorade.
And I'm sure the ruling body said when they got the $3,000, thank you.
Tax.
Where's my taxes?
Thanks.
But that's
where's
the kind of crap that most African-American officials, basically in any sport, and especially in boxing, you've seen where non-African-American officials make calls wrong, instant replay shows that they're wrong, and they're never taken to task. Never taken to task. Now, we had something that happened 2 years ago in a fight in New Jersey that I even spoke to the commissioner about it. There was a decision made in a Williams-Lara fight. I was there.
Oh, my God. That was the worst decision ever, Eddie.
That's never happened before. Never. He suspended all three of the judges, and they had to go through a process. It took them a while before they was able to get their license back. And my first thing was, if Julie Letterman would have been one of the judges, would they have been suspended? Now,
Eddie, a tremendous point, because I talked about that. I got a 488 number. That is that a listener or a caller? 488-607.
That's
my man.
That's Mario Serrano.
Oh, I know what you're gonna live forever, ladies and gentlemen. This is, you know what? This is the PR. That's our man Mario. You know, I thought about you today, and you're like James Brown, man. You're the hardest working PR man in boxing. Without question, man. This man, give us just a minute to get you a good look to tell us what's happening. You see him, you know, he's got the camera here, he's got a mic there. So glad you could join us. Your thoughts here, too, because he works for sure. Real question. For you, Mario, you know, I remember that because that was the first time I ever remembered, you know, that happening. And you talk about bad decisions. They're talking about the Jersey Joe Walcott, Joe Louis fight, okay?
Right.
And I remember Joe Louis knew he lost. Joe Louis went to the dressing room. They went and got Joe out of the dressing room and told him he won the fight. He won the fight. You know what I mean? Eddie. It's amazing. Mario, I want to get you because you joined us. You got so much happening. Tell us what's happening in your world. Because, I mean, every day I get something.
Well,
now, what's really happening, Mario?
Well, I actually work with Arizandy Lara, and you guys are talking about him right now, how he got robbed.
Oh, you do? Oh, I'm so glad you're on the show because I would love to ask you a question. I would love to.
Yeah,
this is Lady A. I would love
time.
To ask you a question.
Wait. 45 seconds in the show, Mario, and you're taking the show over. Maybe you ought to call back next week, Mario. God, 45 seconds. Go ahead, Mario.
He got the bell. Ding.
No. Well, just going on what you guys are talking about that bad decision that Lara had to endure, I mean, it was horrible. Like Mr. Cotton was saying, that they suspended those referees, and it took a lot of effort to get those guys reprimanded for what they did. But in the long run, you got a guy like Arizandy Lara who got this loss on his record when he should be undefeated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Doc, can I add something?
Yeah.
No. Later, you can call me because that fight, and to look back too, it's amazing how things change. He changed his name to the American Dream. Excuse the term now, he's a motherfucker, boy. The left-handed, that long reach, a tremendous fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look back at that fight, you know, that the Paul Williams fight, and now here's Paul Williams after the accident. You know, he's crippled,
right.
Paralyzed. But, you know, Mario, Lawler is, he's gifted. He's a special fighter, Mario.
Yeah, one of the best to come out of Cuba. You know, those guys are...
Right.
Those guys box to feed their families when they're kids, you know what I mean, to get water. You know what I mean?
Doc, can I ask you a question?
Good. Go ahead. Ask him.
Hi, how you doing? It's Lady A. I want to ask a question.
Sure.
Why didn't Erislandi de Lara fight Canelo Alvarez, and why did they pick Angulo to fight and not Erislandi de Lara?
Well, that's a question that you have to ask the promoters, because bottom line.
No, no. What is your opinion as to why it was? Because I said to Doc, he should have been the guy to take that fight because he beat Angulo and he beat Trout. So why didn't he get the fight, and why did they give it to Angulo?
Well, before he answers, I think the answer is kind of obvious, because they felt they couldn't beat him. I mean, you're right. His resume said that he had earned that title shot. But, you know, nobody, you know, the days of guys fighting the best guys. Floyd Patterson, you take your hat up to Floyd Patterson. A custom model knew Floyd couldn't beat Liston. But Floyd said, hey, man, he deserves a shot. And I think it's obvious, Mario, that they knew they couldn't beat him. They took the easier fight, Mario. But give him an answer there, Mario.
Yeah, well, like I said, to answer your question, it's the politics of boxing that keep the best fighting the best. And last night after the fight, Lara walked up on stage, got on the microphone while Canelo was up there, and basically stated his case, like, when are you going to fight me? Like, what's up? Like, what are you doing? I mean, you got to do these type of things to get these fights. If you don't do nothing, say he didn't walk up on stage, then nothing would ever happen. So people were like, oh, you go look on the internet, it was like, Canelo shut Lara down. You know, he tried to get up there and say anything, but Canelo shut him down. Well, if he never went up there, they wouldn't be saying anything. So, whether he shut him down or not, at least people were talking about it. At least
the flip side to that is now you look at a guy like Julio Cesar Chavez that called out Triple G. Okay, at least he's making the effort where no one is even trying to call the guy out.
Right.
So it's comparatively speaking, it's kind of the same thing, you know.
Lara called him out too. Lara wants to fight the best. Yeah, Lara called out Triple G. Go Google it.
Whoa! That's a fight. Whoa! You know, I remember him that night against Paul Wade.
Wait! He said that he's so. Hold up. So Lara's really willing to go up. Is willing to go up in weight.
Yep.
So he's willing to go up in weight to 160 to fight him.
I don't know if he's willing to go up to 160, but he said he'll fight him. I don't know what the stipulation as far as what he said as far as the weight, but you know, I know Triple G would come down to fight Mayweather.
I'm gonna tell you this right now: if Triple G fights Julio Cesar Chavez, Julio Cesar Chavez better look for another profession.
Oh yeah, Triple G ain't no joke.
He better look for another profession, because Chavez is not, I'm telling you right now, Chavez.
But you know the thing with Chavez, you know the thing, he's a big, tough kid. He's a big, tough kid, you know, and you got to understand, and Mario knows this better than anybody else, because he's one of the top PR men ever in his business. You know, nobody goes in that ring at the weight that you weighed in the day before. He's going
to
be
so
much.
All right, Doc, what are you saying? You thinking he's going to go up to 205? You think he's going to hydrate up to 205 and fight Triple G?
Well, he's going to be bigger. He's going to lean. He can take the. I mean, Triple G's a better fighter. There's no question about it.
He's a better fighter.
But he stands a chance. I mean, the question is, what happens to Triple G when he hits somebody and they don't move? They don't move. I mean, that's a good question. Right. And I think Chavez would be the kind of guy that would not move. Now,
first of all, I think that when you look at Triple G, because of his sound amateur background, I don't think you're just looking at a guy that's just a puncher. Triple G is a phenomenal. His fundamentals are so much better than a lot of these boxers out here today.
Great point, Mario. Come on, you agree?
Well, there's no doubt about it. Triple G is a true boxing expert. He knows how to cut off the ring. If you watch Triple G fight, he doesn't waste his energy. He's not running around the ring.
Wow.
He just stays there and methodically comes at you, and that's why he's able to have power later on in the fight and take these guys out, because he's not burning up energy. He's not wasting old energy. You know who told me about that? It was Chuck Bodak, the late Chuck Bodak, the cut man.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know who Chuck Bodak is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Chuck.
Chuck Bodak. Well, Chuck Bodak told me before he passed away, he's like, all these guys are running around, they're doing this, they're wasting all their energy, and when it gets to the later rounds, they run out of gas. So a guy like him running around, he just kind of slowly comes in, he's not wasting energy, and every punch that he throws, it's accurate, it's calculated, and he's throwing it with power, and he's not wasting any punches. So all his punches are calculated. So, I mean,
Mario, back then, he spoke to the Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Government Network. Again, you know, you hear things here you don't hear any place else. You learn. Sports in Depth, we give you the update, and we teach you. Mario, is there anybody that he reminds you of in the past that Triple G, you know, maybe an Aguayo or somebody where there was no wasted energy, no wasted motion? Anybody that he reminds you of?
You know, I'm not really too familiar with the old-time fighters.
Okay.
Of the last 10, 15, 20-year guy.
Okay.
I do read about that, you know. But I can't really remember anybody that kind of fights that game because, if you watch him fight,
wow.
Really, he kind of just comes in. He's moving his head, but he's not like going all crazy. He's coming at you, and then he's throwing his punches, man, with a lot of power. And you're the guy running away from him, and he's not like chasing you. He's just kind of stalking you. And he's
Mario.
He doesn't get tired.
Mario, I had him ranked as number 3 for the year. Would you concur or not?
As far as pound for pound?
Yes. I had Mayweather, Ward, and then I had him. Would you concur or no?
I wouldn't argue with that.
Okay.
At all.
Really?
This is something, though, that is a question. A guy like Lara, who moves around, could give him problems. And same with Mayweather. I mean, those guys, they move around, they boom, boom, they're in, they're out, and if you could do that for 12 rounds, that might give him problems. You know what I mean?
Harold Weston, right. Is Harold still there or did he go in studio? Harold, you still there? You went in studio.
Okay.
No, I thought Harold Weston was here. So I wanted to get that. Okay, Mario, you seem to be very impressed with Triple G. Give us a rundown. You got some forthcoming fights because everybody knows we got Hopkins at the press conference this Wednesday at the BB Kings. He's going to be fighting in Washington, D.C. We know that Cotto and Martinez, press conference Tuesday there at Madison Square Garden. Mayweather is going to be fighting out in Vegas. Now, Gary, sure, you got some fights coming up too. What's happening on your agenda? Give us some names and some dates there, Mario.
Looks like, for sure, Kareem Mayfield fighting Thomas DeLorme. They're talking possibly. There's rumblings of that's on March 29th on the undercard of the Kovalov fight on HBO. So.
Oh yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Kareem Mayfield, undefeated from San Francisco, is fighting Thomas DeLorme from Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
I actually do PR for both of them because I work with Gary and then I work with Kareem.
Mario, who does the PR from? There's rumors that your family goes back to Cain and Abel. That's how busy you've been staying, man.
No, I am a big believer in Christ. There's no doubt. I put the Lord first in my life, and I'm just so blessed to be in the boxing world. I mean, to be in this boxing world and do what I do, to come from where I came from, only the good Lord Jesus Christ could take somebody from where I was to bring them to where I'm at now. So I love that, man.
You know, I remember when I first met you. That's the thing that was the ghost that you talked about. And you know, hey, man, God is for you who be against you, and he's the only true champion. Mario, talk about that. Okay, where are you from? How did it start? How long have you been in the business? Give us a mystery on you.
My first ever client ever ended up being a 6-time world champion. That's Robert Guerrero. So my good friend Bob Santos, you know, we're all still working together with Robert and a few other fighters. I was living in the world, and he just, you know, started taking me back to church. And, you know, Robert was already fighting. He's an undefeated guy, fighting on Fox when he was with Goosen, Fox Sports, and all these little shows. And he was knocking everybody out. I'm like, hey, Bob, why isn't the Mercury News, which is the local paper in the Bay Area, San Jose, where Robert's from. I'm like, why is they doing stories on Robert? He's like, I don't know, man. I go, well, I'm going to send him an email. He goes, okay, you're the publicist. And I said, okay, really? That's how it all started. I mean, you can see the miracle already happening because, really, I didn't go to college to be a public
relations.
Although it's in my blood, because in high school I was like the public relations guy for like the school ASD and stuff like that. But it wasn't like I was this honor student or nothing. And I only went to 1 year of college. I played a little bit of baseball, but you know it wasn't like I was this super educated guy. My education comes from the Bible, which is the best education. So that's where I know my common sense stuff. Anyways, Robert kept rolling, and I started to just put my own ideas that just came from me. And one of the things I used to do early on was just get the story that, say, somebody wrote on my guy and send it to all the other writers. And all I do is just scour. I'd be literally on my computer scouring the internet for boxing emails. And all I did was just gather up a database of emails and gathering them. People just didn't really know who I was, and I just started busting out Robert Guerrero. And, you know, I laid down the red carpet for him, and he just kind of walked down it and accomplished his goal. So it's like a big team effort, you know, with Team Guerrero. You know, we just really worked hard. And Bob, my mentor, he would always just push me to do things, you know, just keep going and going. And I just kept going and going. And I just said, hey, what else am I going to do? You know, God's promise is if you work hard, there'll be profit at the end. And that's all I just kept living my life by. Just work hard. You know, just go to work. Even if you're just working. I mean, I worked for free for 2 years, just learning, you know. And here I am now, you know, just thankful and blessed to be working in the boxing world, you know, as a publicist. So. One thing about being a publicist people don't really know is you're really talking to everybody. You're talking to the trainers. You're talking to the buyers. You're talking to the promoters. You're talking to the managers. You're talking to everybody. So if there's ever somebody that you really want to help you out, talk to the publicist because that guy knows everybody. You know what I mean? That guy's talking to everybody. He's talking to the trainers, talking to the media. I mean, there's not nobody in boxing that he's not talking to. That guy's talking to everybody. So,
and the thing about doing what he does, Doc, the thing about doing what Mario does is, you know, when you get to cover up close and personal, I don't have to tell you the boxers, the wrestlers, the football players. You know, you are talking to, you know, bona fide and tough guys, but all have to go out of their way to try to prove it all the time because that's what they do. You know, just from the fact of what they do every day and what they train to do, you know, talks about their toughness. So, you know, usually have most of the guys are pretty genuine. But like I said, they don't have to go out of the way to try to play tough because they are bona fide tough guys.
Tremendous point you bring up. Good, man. Good, man.
No, well I was just going to say one thing I try to tell my fighters who my mentor, Bob Santos, told me, because you can overload the fighter with all this media stuff and these interviews and all this stuff. It's all great, right? But the best publicity is winning in the ring. So there's a fine line before you get to where it's getting too much and redundant, and you just got to shut it down sometimes. Because you know what? Like I said, the best publicity is winning in the ring. And that's all that really
you know,
matters.
Mario, tremendous line. So the best of bottom line. It's a great line. And covering Doc Sandy's Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network, I forgot, he was a ghost until I finally met him. He's been so busy, Mario. And I remember and covering sports, been blessed, because all great and wonderful things come from God. And covering sports of a horde of athletes. Boxers, and lady, you've been with me, so you two ways. Boxers seem to be the most genuine, the most
oh,
ritual,
my God,
the
best.
The most
the
sincere.
Best.
You know, they've always
yes,
been,
the
hey,
best.
And the great line is, hey, champ. And you know, they stop. They always have a minute. And I think, and you were the top PR manager, and I think fighters study you. You know, they listen to your questions. They become aware who you are. They kind of read you like you're trying to read them, Mario.
Yeah, and one thing about boxing is we're not mainstream like we used to be.
No.
Like we should be.
That's correct.
And when somebody's asking questions, whether it be from the tiniest little website to the ESPN. These guys are taking time to ask you a question. So I was telling my fighters, like, hey, man, speak from the heart, do as many interviews as you can, because as you ascend to the top, you know, you want to learn how to speak. And when somebody's taking the time to ask you questions, you know, these fighters who you know, nobody really, sometimes when they're coming up as prospects, you know, they're all gung-ho, man, and they like when people ask questions, because it's not mainstream like it used to be anymore. So
I think also, if I could interject, I think that a big thing also is that, you know, the media has changed significantly, I think, in the last 10 years.
The mainstream
channels, the mainstream media outlets, you know, people are not – for instance, I'll just shoot an example to you, Mario. You know, a big thing was said recently about the Pro Bowl and, you know, how they were looking at the Pro Bowl because the ratings weren't all that great. Well, you know, one of the things they should have considered also is that you have people that DVR things. You have people that go online and they look at YouTube. And so when you look at ratings, is it an immediate survey that you're looking at? Or are you looking at all those people that utilize other resources to get their information? So you may neglect to look at Facebook, Twitter, you know, other outlets that people use to get their information. And I think that sometimes, you know, those things are negated, where 10 years ago you had the mainstream ESPN, SNY, and all these other media outlets that may have been predominant, you know, and whatnot. Well, now it's like, you know what? All these little stations that you're talking about now is where a lot of people may be going to get their information, where they weren't as privy to that stuff before.
The point you make, too, because, you know, the Internet has had a big impact. With the inception of the Internet, it was seen as minuscule, not important. You know, and Internet finally got some recognition. My first mentor, the late Dr. Frank Bannister, always told me, you know, always when you step, especially with fighters, they will remember you when you're there at the beginning of their careers. And my catch had a great line about Ali, and you just talked about that, Mario, tremendous line that you preached. And he said Ali treated the guy from the high school newspaper the same way he treated the guy from the New York Times. And because you just never know. Where God's going to send to. Just like you never know this kid you're talking to, he may be a world champion. Well, this guy that you give this question to, who now has this little microphone, he might become the director of ESPN or the sports editor of the New York Times, even the Times doesn't cover. But it seems fighters are a lot more cognizant of that than anybody else. But Mario, in saying that, keep a tradition that is no longer that way anymore in sports. Mm-hmm. Too often, the media people are concerned about the time. I remember Wally Matthews told me years ago when we were there, he was the president of the boxing writers, and he was with the Newsday, and he said something that was so profound. He said, you know, Doc, he said, you know, people don't understand. So they read the news, the Times, and the Post. But we don't sell tickets. It's the grassroots people who sell tickets. The weekly newspaper, the small Internet guy. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who sells a ticket to Julio and says, you know what, you know, I'm going to save $50 and go to the fight. Or I'm going to get together with Marcus, and we're going to watch that fight on pay-per-view, because the Times, the News, the Post, they're just normally read. And you said something that people don't realize. What Ali realized, you know, it's what Duran realized. Ray Leonard.
You know what? Let me interject, because that guy, that little guy, supposedly that's trying to make a name, and he's got this little mic, and he's just a guy trying to make it, as opposed to like a guy like Dan Raphael who has a big network behind. Okay, so you got a guy like Dan Raphael who's kind of like the big guy, and you got the little guy. Well, the little guy who gets you with the Robert Guerrero or the Canelo, that guy's talking to thousands and thousands of people, grassroots, about his interview that he did with him. And he's going all out because he's so gung-ho, he got to interview Canelo, whereas, you know, a guy like Rafael, you know, he's got that big network behind him. He just only has to do it one time. It's out there, and then people go there to read it. But he's not
limited.
Grassroots
limited.
Talking about it to all his little people. I mean, this guy talks to everywhere he goes. You know, he's talking to his uncle, his family, his friends. Hey, man, I interviewed Canelo. You know what I mean? So he's totally spreading the word that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I've seen some riders get to the top that were at the bottom.
Mm-hmm. So the tremendous point, I mean, like, is that word of mouth, is the sincerity. As big as the big guys are, they're limited. You know, it's television, but you're right. It's the word of mouth. It's the guy who brings. Also, the guy shout out. I remember Mark Bigger told me the big difference he had in the pros and amateurs. And he said that when he got to the pros, it wasn't fun anymore because he was limited. You know, he's with main event, so he can't talk to me because I'm fighting with Don King. He can't talk to you because, you know, you're fighting with main event. And, you know, he's lost a lot of the zeal. And what you say
that's
here,
the politics, Doc. That's the politics we always talk about,
right.
Just like Top Rank and Golden Boy right now. You know, the worst thing I think that's going on now in boxing is the fact that because those two main promoters are not, fans are being shortchanged. You know, you're saying the best aren't even fighting the best. They're not. The best aren't fighting the best.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the bottom line.
Because,
I mean, when you got...
That's because the public's willing to pay $60 a shot. And it's not, like you said, it's not the best fight in the best.
No.
But those guys are still putting the 60 in their pocket. So until the fans decide to make some kind of stand and say, hey, if it doesn't at least on paper appear to be an awesome fight and they're not getting their 60, they'll keep putting on what they feel like putting on.
Right, right.
My catch is to say, if you build it, they will come. Jumpshot Jonesy, your thoughts here.
One thing I do want to say, I'm not sure who's supposed to talk, but I do not understand, right? I just don't understand this. Why ESPN or any big giant network, whether it be CNN, ESPN, any network, sports network, Fox, why don't they show the knockouts of the week? Why aren't they showing even if it's just 30 seconds or a minute long? Okay, well, here we go. Here's a knockout. Like, why? Nobody, everybody loves a knockout. Everybody wants to see a knockout, man. Who doesn't want to see a knockout? You know what I mean? And I just don't know why they don't show, like, the knockout. Don't get it.
Mario, the great line. I remember my late dear friend Emmanuel Stewart, he talked about when Tyson first came up, he said, I couldn't wait to get home to see Mike Tyson fight on a Friday night. He said, I didn't know who he was going to fight. But I couldn't wait to get home to see him knock somebody out. And there's nothing. It's the home run, baseball,
you
the
know,
knockout.
I'm
you
not
know.
Interrupting.
Yeah.
But
Jack, also,
before.
I think, you know.
Go right ahead.
Go ahead, Booney. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Lady A, that I've had this funny conversation with Doc about a conversation I once had with Mike about that. And I said, you know, Mike, you're knocking these guys out so fast, man, that people think what you do is easy, man. So, yeah. So we both kind of share a laugh, and he kind of looked at me and say, yeah, I know. Can you believe that, man? They think what I do is easy. I'm like, you're knocking these guys out too fast, Mike. I said that, Lady A and Doc and panel, because people actually started to believe that these guys are bums, man. Mike's knocking everybody out in one round.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do it, it must be easier than I
But it's not even, it's not even that. It's just, like you said, it's doing it convincingly. Like,
yeah.
to the point now that the heavyweight division, I think it's a joke right now. You know, doing it convincingly. Like, Doc and I were talking about this before, which was that since Mike Tyson has left the heavyweight division, I don't think you have people watching the heavyweights as much as Mike Tyson was
the last great heavyweight champion, not only of the 20th century, but the last great heavyweight champ we're ever going to have in boxing. And he was that because he was the linkage between Ali, Holmes, Foreman, Marciano, Joe Louis. In other words, he was the guy as a champ. And you pick up the newspaper, you say, oh, heavyweight champion at the U.S. Wimbledon tennis champion, or the heavyweight champion was at the World Series game, or the heavyweight champion was at wherever he went, like the great champ before him, the world was cognizant of the heavyweight champion of the world. And that's not so anymore. Real quick, Cincinnati City.
And Doc, before you go,
go ahead.
I just wanted to say now, you know, at 5'11", and around 220, by these standards today, Mike would be considered the smallest heavyweight.
Well, yeah, it's funny because you talk about the so-called small size of Mike, but what the heck? You know, Marciano and Lewis had a hard time breaking 200 pounds. Those guys basically were, if you would want to say, were big, light heavyweights, so it's amazing. But you know, it's a skill level, the big thing that Mike had. People forget, you know, the thing that made Mike so tough was that, you know, Mike was the guy that was hard to hit. I mean, Cuss had taught him.
Hands down, Doc, I got to agree with you. That the lateral movement, I think that's what made him so great. You know, the head movement, the lateral movement.
We talked about that too, lady. He said when he first got, Harold must have left that studio because Harold was part of that Gil Clancy studio too, was that, you know, for 3 months, he just taught him defense. I mean, the thing that Mayweather said that's so profound, you know, the less you get hit, the longer you last. This game is about hitting and not getting hit. And
right.
People, I mean, they like, as Rudy said, they like to see the knockout. But the idea, you know, hey, you want to hit and not get hit. Want to get back to Cincinnati C for a minute. Do you think the clock is ticking on Peyton Manning? He's got another year or two, and not to mention at a moment's notice, if he gets hit, that injury, at any moment, Cincinnati, his NFL career could be gone, correct?
Yeah, if he takes a real hard hit or he gets that neck snap back like he did when he was in Indianapolis. I forgot which game that was, where his neck was snapped back. That's what caused the injury. But I still think he has about 2 years left.
What happened with Champ Bailey? Now, Champ Bailey, is, you know, the captain, he got caught into, I guess, a combination of the salary cap. Do you see his career gone? Is he done? Will somebody pick him up?
There could be out there. I mean, he's a big name. I mean, he's up there in age. He has some injury issues. But that's up in the air, whether his career is totally done. I think he could be picked up, depending on you know, what's out there with this free agency. Just real quick, Doc, on behalf of the Sports and Deaf Nation, we just want to wish the family, the Ford family, our deepest condolences on the loss of the Detroit owners and the last surviving grandchild of the founder, Henry Ford, of the Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
William Clay Ford Sr., who passed away yesterday due to complications from pneumonia. He was the Detroit owner, Lions owner, since 1963 after purchasing a team from Lyle Fife and Edwin Anders for $4.5 million. So we just wish the family our deepest condolences as they deal with this untimely death. And also, running back Rashard Mendenhall called it quits after 6 seasons with the Arizona Cardinals after putting up 3.2 yards per carry during the 2013 seasons. He was the number 23 overall pick in the 2008 draft. His career is 4,236 total yards, carry yards, 39 touchdowns. Average of 3.9 yards per carry. It looks like running back Andre Ellington, number 38 from Clemson, who scored 3 touchdowns, 652 yards on 118 carries, is going to take over his place over out there in that division for Arizona Cardinals.
Wings, will somebody pick up Cremonti? And is there a remote chance, as hypothetical as it can be, that we could wind up with Revis back here?
I don't see Revis coming back here at this point.
Bad blood? Bad blood or what?
He may end up with the Texans, maybe the 49ers, if it gets to that point.
No,
that's our boy,
I don't think he would want to come back here.
Huh?
That's our boy, Doc.
I don't think he would want to come back here.
Yeah. I mean, what about New England? Would he go to New England?
I think he would if they picked him up. I think Cromartie, out of the three, out of Sanchez and Holmes, I think he may be the one that survives the free agency if they restructure his contract.
Really?
But I definitely
really?
Think, yeah, I think he'll come back. You look at Calvin Pace, he was cut, and he came back at a discount. So I think for Marty, I think the Jets bring him back if he.
Well, he was injured for most of the season, Doc. You know that he had a hip injury, so.
But he made the Pro Bowl. You got to give him credit. He made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, man, he did the right thing.
Yeah,
he's a tough guy.
Tremendous. Yeah. Now here's a question I want to ask too. Now, And Rivera, you know, the record showed that you know, he was Coach of the Year. But I thought a lot of consideration had to go to Belichick for Coach of the Year. And I think Rivera is going to have to find a way to let Cam roll and run a little more. And the defense is going to have to step it up. I just thought that a lot of could have been said. I mean, you're a footballer, so I think a lot of people said for Belichick. I mean, he kept making adjustments. They lost. Both of his tight ends were out. He brought him back. He lost again. He had to find a running game. I just thought a lot could have been said for him to have been coached. Yeah, I just thought he had you know, I thought he could have been. I thought he could have been.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You look at the personnel that he had with all the injuries, Gronkowski going out. His career may be done with all the injuries.
Wow.
I mean, that big contract. He just keep getting injured. And you make a tremendous point, Doc, about Belichick. The only time they didn't win the division is when Brady was hurt, when he hurt his ankle. Every other time they won the division.
They won the division.
I mean, we just have to buckle up and get ready for this wild free agency. It's the last hurrah before the draft in May 8th. So it's going to be very interesting. I mean, me and Hoops have talked about it. I don't think it's going to be as crazy as the 2013 free agency, but, you know, you look at the Jets, they have about 15 unrestricted free agents. The Giants, they have their a lot of holes to fill, just a couple of names, big names, that are restricted free agents. Defensive end, Justin Tuck. Defensive tackle, Linville Joseph. Linebacker John Benson, who they required from the Panthers. Offensive lineman Kevin Booth. Running back Andre Brown, who broke his leg last season. He's a pretty decent running back when he's not fumbling the ball. Cornerback Terrell Thomas, who's a I mean, remember Coughlin set him down too when he fumbled the ball.
My question is real quick, Doc.
No, I just wanted to say quickly, Doc, to see that the Giants also have to pray that Jason Pierre-Paul shows some semblance of being back to his old
form. Rooney, I mean, you know what? One of the most severe of all injuries, and one of the most that can just be such a deleted, is the back. I mean, you know, JPP. I remember the game I was in Brazil, the Cowboy game. That game he did so much. I mean, I remember the announcer said not only did he win the game, but he made all pro. I mean, you can't play when you're not hurt, which brings me to this point, Cincinnati, that I think one of two things. Last year, Eli Manning was hurt or it's validated that he's not as good as he's perceived to be. Talk to me.
I think he's definitely a good quarterback, and it just goes to show you when a team experiences key injuries of a lot of key players, whether it be in basketball. You see what the Knicks went through with Tyson Chandler going down early in the season. I mean, you look at a team like New England, the Giants, with a lot of the injuries, especially look at this season when they became the first team to go 9-7 in the Super Bowl. They were plagued with injuries, but once everyone got healthy at the end, they went on that run and got hot. So I think that Eli Manning still has about 5 to 7 years left in him to play.
Really? 5 to 7?
5 to 7 years.
Now you talked about
a good quarterback.
Yeah, you talked about jump shot. Are you still with us? Okay, I thought the jump shot went to the studio. Yeah, and then you talked about, and I think remote or as far fetched as it can be, if the Knicks could get hot, and that's the whole key, you know, who goes into the playoffs hot? I mean, they could go further. Well, you know, the big thing, too, that Jonesy pointed out, that they just don't have the personnel anymore. You know what we're going to do? We're going to hold
Doc, I want to ask Hoops a question.
Hold on. We're gonna bring Hoots back in a minute. We wanna do. We're gonna do real quickly. We're gonna do Mike
Hoots
on lights off.
Though.
Hold on. We're gonna bring him right back in a minute. Just don't move. I need. We're gonna run. We're gonna run from full time to lights on, mics off, and we're gonna bring him into that. It's none other than the man who brought us into Sports in Depth Nation, Rudy. Mic on, lights off, if you please, if it's not a problem, sir.
Well, good doctor, these Sports in Depth Nation's been here. These Sports in Depth panels been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We've been here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that stirs the drink has been here. And that's been the incomparable Doc Stanley. Stay tuned because immediately following is Mics On, Lights Off.
And I hear something.
Here we go, guys.
Wah, 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 wah.
And call me righteous. And with that, we're going to move into Mic On, Lights Off. Another good 15, 20 minutes here. The gang's all here. Mel, Cope, Sal, Smith, Junior, Lady, hey, the Zooster, Cincinnati Series, 10-4-1, and the hardest working man in PR, the James Brown of PR, Mario. And without further ado, letting the ladies be the first lady, hey, have your way. Here's a question for the Hoopster from Brownsville who could take you down low off the dribble, buffalo the booty, or slam the dunkster if he has to. Ladies and gentlemen, Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, Block Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Mic on, lights off. Lady A, take it away.
Yeah, Hoops, my question was basically today we saw Chicago beat the Heat. So my question to you is everybody's, you know, has this prediction that the Heat's going to go all the way again. But what was the main thing today that you saw in the game that the Heat, I thought they were kind of exploited. But what do you think was what the breakdown was that led to them losing today?
Yo, you mean to somebody? This is somebody that sees something. You're asking a hoopster and not Mel?
No, I'm asking a hoopster today. I'm asking a hoopster this question. I'm asking a hoopster this question because we had a conversation about this. That's why I want to know what he's gonna say.
Well, today, what I saw today, the Bulls plays defense, and defense win games. And plus, when they shut down LeBron James, that boy
not only shut him down, but frustrated him to the point where he almost got in a fight. But go ahead.
It was defense, and Tom Thibodeau also is my vote as coach of the year.
Really?
If I had a vote right now, he's my coach of the year right now.
Okay.
After that, no Luol Deng, no Derrick Rose, and then
Noah dunked it like crazy.
Noah was for letting us out there.
Yep.
He fired him up. His father up there cheering. That was unbelievable. That family.
Thought he was going to come down from the stands with his tennis racket.
That was amazing.
You gave me a good run there because we have in our Trust in God Sports and Evidence, in fact, Hall of Fame, we have an autographed picture from his daddy in one of the wristbands. I just had to throw that in. Go ahead, Hoopster. Talk to us, baby.
Well, look, like I said, like Lady H answered that question, the Bulls were relentless today. Their defense and their crowd had them going today. It was the crowd that had the Bulls going. And plus, you know, they don't like each other. You know that. They can't stand each other.
I think the whole key to Miami is two things. the health of Wade and also the health of Bosch. I know Bosch is the guy that allows Dwayne and LeBron to kind of do what they want to do. You know, he'll get that rebound. He'll hit the shot when it's needed from the double team. He'll play the. I think he's really the big key. But I think the overall key to their success is Dwayne Wade. You know, they're a much better team with all three of them on the floor. He seems to have a horde of injury problems the last 2 or 3 years. How healthy is he? And like I said, I just feel that he's the whole key to their success. If he's not healthy, they can forget about a three-peat, Hoopsa.
You're right. Definitely forget about it. And also,
I don't know if I agree with that, though, guys. I really don't know. Because, remember, they've been winning a lot. They won a lot without him the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Well, Lady A, don't forget, I was calling you to let you know. You see what the Spurs did to them, right?
Yeah.
I was telling you before, the old school Spurs.
Right.
You got to give them credit, too.
Do you see Oklahoma City coming out of the West over San Antonio? They lost today, too.
Nah, he sees San Antonio all the way.
San Antonio's going to GAC.
He sees it all the way. But, again, I think the key to everything is health, though. I mean, if these guys are unhealthy, you know, and can't, you know, and they get injured, I still think that that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, well, that's always the case, especially with Wade and all the mileage that's been put on, all the mileage on his body. And you said Bosch wasn't great. You know, it's like LeBron needs that supporting cast because as great as he is, one man is not a teammate. Hey, Doc, I got a quick aside for you just quickly. I'll be brief about it. And see, when you have a wrestling background also, we'll be especially interested in this. Doc and panel, in about a month, the WWE has their yearly huge WrestleMania.